Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Why should we be interested in anything that's happening in Australia? It takes 14 hours to get there by jet. We've got concerns of our own right here at home, right? Well, Australia is presently being a petri dish for some religious liberty issues, and we've got Lincoln Steed, who, as you'll soon hear, sounds like he should be interested in Australia. Lincoln, what's going on down under that we need to know about?
Well, it's on my mind today because in 2 days' time I'll be on that 14-hour flight.
Yes, you will.
Plus, across the U.S., then 14 hours.
Yes.
On my way to Australia. And I'm originally from Australia, so it holds a little special interest to me.
Sure.
But I think Australia, at least when you talk to Americans, everybody says, oh, I want to go there sometime. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they'll ever get there, it has an interest. Because like Canada and England and New Zealand, we share a language and a large part of our history. We, you know, go back to the British Empire. Not all, but I mean certainly the founding of the U.S. in large part, the story of the British people. And it's worth remembering that the principles of free speech and the rights of the individual and even religious liberty are not unique to the U.S., even if they're expressed uniquely here. Mm. And Australia is sort of a stepchild of American democracy because it was a country that was settled as a direct consequence of the American War of Independence. The British Empire was troubled when the colonists here cut off contact and started fighting them, and they had nowhere to send their political and social prisoners, the indentured servants of American history, if you look it up, but they were convicts. And so a settlement was established in quick order in Australia. But amazingly, some of the lessons were early on learned that Australia was not treated quite the same way. Mm-hmm. It gained its independence much more recent than the U.S. in 1901 with federation, when the states federated. And amazingly, the constitution they adopted was in some parts modeled directly on the U.S. Constitution, like Section 116 of the Australian Constitution says this. Tell me if this doesn't sound familiar. The Commonwealth shall not make any law for establishing any religion or for imposing any religious observance or for prohibiting the free exercise of any religion, and no religious test shall be required as a qualification for any office or public trust under the Commonwealth.
Yep, sounds very familiar.
That's the First Amendment combined with the religion clause,
yes,
which is the total aspect of religion in the U.S. Constitution, by the way. Mm-hmm. So they knowingly copied that. But Australia was not so colored with religion in its settlement as the U.S. was, where there were definitely pockets of religious dissidents that came across escaping different forms of harassment. That was never the case in Australia. Then there was a strongly anti-government, anti-authoritarian movement in the country. So they don't have the respect for the, you know, just because I say so, of any centralized
right,
power.
Right.
So looking at religion in Australia now, I think is very interesting. Because on one level, the people are more free-minded and uncontrolled by authorities than in the U.S. And yet they have largely chosen to respect and abide by religious freedom, even though religion is not a common discussion in the streets of Australia. It's a very secular culture. A lot of people in Australia, if you talk religion to them, they might swear and curse at you, like, none of your bloody business, mate, you know, that sort of response.
You know, that's an interesting point there, Lincoln, that our First Amendment was an outgrowth of a constitution and a group of people who had religion on their mind when they came to this country. And here is Australia that has the same, almost the same wording of it, but was not put together by people with religion on their mind. Yet, we've come to and arrived at a very different place in history now. Am I right in saying that?
Right. My take on it is that both countries at the moment have a rather adequate general treatment of religion. You know, there's no overt persecution at this present time. Has been in both cases in isolated spots in the past, but not at the moment. But I think that the United States might be a little more vulnerable to narrow religious application than Australia. Mm-hmm. Because at the moment, a faction of largely Protestant but some Catholic, middle-of-the-road religious figures, politically motivated political figures, have a close seat at the table and are very close to the ear of the president and the administration. And so they're getting specialized treatment, even as we marginalize Muslims and others whose faith might be seen as un-American. Mm-hmm. That's not the case in Australia. There's a general suspicion of all religion, but a general respect for anybody's religious prerogatives.
This is interesting because we want to have the freedom that we want here, and we are heading in a direction that we talked about in an earlier show when state and church join hands. We're heading for a more dangerous battleground than Australia is, even though we have the same constitutional wording on these subjects, right?
That's what I think.
Yeah.
And ironically, in Australia, the ecumenical movement took a move, and I've talked about it on this program before. In 1977, when I was actually living back there for a while, mm-hmm. they had the Uniting Church, with most Methodist churches, two-thirds of the Presbyterian churches, and the wide-ranging Congregational Union of Australia all joined together to form the Uniting Church, one single legal church body of about 1 million members. Mm-hmm. So the churches were all joining, but not with the state.
Okay, all right.
And I've lived in the U.S. long enough to see the religious prerogatives in the workplace, which we used to think were fairly safe here, although only really legally safe under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, not particularly because the Constitution specified. Mm-hmm. Constitution is broad, not specific. Mm-hmm. But Title VII says you can't be discriminated against on the basis of religion. So in the workplace, you used to get accommodation. Now, you might get it, but if there's any legal challenge, as Articles and Liberty point out, you will probably not, because yeah. the employer is only usually held to a de minimis legal standard, mm-hmm. or a dollar's worth of trouble.
Yes.
Is the bottom line. So in practice, maybe you don't get the accommodation, where I think still in Australia, if you belong to a union, which is the norm in the workplace, the union will defend you and go on strike, and other unions will strike in sympathy if you're not granted your religious prerogative of either headwear or religious garb otherwise, or practice as a day off and so on. It's amazing. Hmm. You know, our church, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, has had great suspicions of unionism for good reasons, and not unfounded. But presently, the unionism, I think, is partly protective of conscience and religious practice in Australia, where it's weakened here and the employer will not easily give away any concession to religious accommodation.
This joining together of the different religions in Australia, maybe you see it as okay, but it kind of makes a red flag for me.
Yeah, it's a red flag for me.
Yeah.
It's just a different dynamic than here. The coalition is more for political gain, not for ecumenical syncretism.
Yeah. You might say it's not for political gain, but maybe in the back of the mind, the people that are doing this, they're seeing, hey, if we get together and have enough block of people, we can have that political power we want to enforce our dogma.
I don't think it's functioned that way in Australia. In
okay.
fact, even the Catholic Church, which is, I think, the largest single denomination, is on its heels in Australia because the global sex scandal of the Roman Catholic Church in particular has been taken seriously by the state, which did a survey, and I spoke about it on this radio program once, did a survey and found that the abuse rate was something like 40%, and in some orders it was as high as 60%. I mean, that's just horrendous. Oh. And so only a few months ago now, they brought to trial and convicted Cardinal Pell, the top cardinal from Australia, who was basically the Vatican finance minister. Mm-hmm. He's been convicted and sent to prison.
Wow.
That's not been done in this country.
And that's true.
So the power of organized churches has some validity in the U.S., but not necessarily in Australia.
Well, where do you see it going?
Well, I know where it's going, and this is a synthesis of looking at history and reading prophecy.
Yeah.
But the facts are that the U.S. is a dominant influence in the Western world particularly. And if we drift toward minimizing religious freedoms and prerogatives, I'm sure at some point Australia will likely follow suit, and that's the sad thing. Now, there's a certain concurrence in both the emerging gay rights and the whole gay and transgender agenda, mm-hmm. I think is being used as sort of as a cudgel against religious expression and religious doctrines even. Mm-hmm. And it's the same in Australia as the US. It's very difficult. I think in the US there's more kickback from the churches and not always appropriate.
Right.
Like at the moment, I think California have passed something against where people are forcibly re-educated away from aversion therapy and stuff like that, away from homosexuality. That's not particularly a phenomenon in Australia, but in Australia, also Canada and the US, people of faith are being told that they're bigoted, that they have no right to even speak their moral principles vis-a-vis the gay lifestyle, and that this is antisocial and will be punished by law, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. I saw something on social media. Someone mentioned that California was trying to get its priests and whatnot to sort of pull back on what they say about gays in our schools and our teachers and whatnot. Did you see that?
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I read the legislation at the root. It's arguing against these very abusive sessions where someone basically got in a room and harangued and kept hostage till they change. And I don't think anybody of real religious spiritual faith and personal religious sensibility would uphold that sort of thing. So that's being used as a bit of a straw man argument as to why people of faith shouldn't hold the views they hold.
Yeah, when I read that legislation, I thought, well, this is not a bad idea. We need to have compassion and respect for people as we talk about all people, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We've had programs on it. That's the difficult thing that Christians and other people of faith need to thread in a modern society that might be drifting away from religious and cultural norms. Yeah. The church, and this we're back to where we started before on an earlier program or another program, the Union of Churches stayed under some of the despots. Like the Nazis. Germany was very corrupt and immoral at the time the Nazis took over. So their goal of morally regenerating the state was not wrong, but they went about it in a very brutal and ultimately bloodthirsty way. And Christians need to change the world by their witness and their kindness and their love toward other people. And of course, state when appropriate what the moral principles are, but by condemning and trying to use laws and do end runs to prevent the wicked from doing what, under their own civil structure, they're empowered to do. That's trying to substitute religious law for state law, and that's not right. Never was right. It leads to the Inquisition.
Lessons learned from the United States and from Australia and from other parts of the world. Lincoln Steed has been our guest today. Lincoln, thank you very much for your words of wisdom and guidance.
Always a pleasure.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone.
If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258. Or email us through our website at libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.